back when I was in school. Then I can figure up the text. I would know a lot of facts. I missed the class where they taught the rules. I was memorizing capitals. I was in the spelling bee. I must have missed the part where they taught the art of private equity. I was selling chocolate bars. I had a disorder. I was cutting up a frog. Got lost in the fog. Learning how to play recorder. If you only worked a little harder. If you worked a little harder. If you worked a little harder. You never laughed more. So the blame and the shame's on you for being so damn poor. It ain't the banks and it ain't the taxes. It ain't the payday loans and high rent homes and predatory fees and practices. Wave your dumb flag, whatever it means. But you should ask yourself when it comes to health of the poor, really all that free. If you're worth a little.
Hi, I'm Lillian, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7.
All My Greatest Teacher Showed Me Love, a new mental health program hosted by Zan, providing tips and tools along with music, interviews to lighten and brighten in these uncertain times. Join the community every first and third Wednesday from 10 to 11 a.m. only on KBOO 90.7.
All you need is love.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program showcasing radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week. I'm Stephanie Schubert with Pacifica Network. Today, the show is being recorded in front of a live audience in Spokane, Washington at the Grassroots Radio Conference. We will be talking about local news meeting the moment. Our host is Luke Baumgarten, the editor and publisher of Range Media, a worker-owned newsroom in Spokane, and one of the hosts of Free Range, a weekly local news show co-produced with KYRS Thin Air Community Radio.
Thanks, Stephanie. I think we're actually broadcasting on KYRS right now. We're also recording for later broadcast on Sprouts. And of course, this is a conference audience. So I've never done any of these things before. Thank you so much. It was interesting to hear Ursula talk about Sprouts starting in 2003, because I started hearing about the death of journalism the year I became a journalist in 2004. In the two decades since, across the country, we've seen newsrooms shrink to a fraction of their former size. We've seen century-old newsrooms disappear completely. We've seen big conglomerates buy important news sources, almost always stripping those newsrooms of a lot of their local character. And that's actually the better of bad options, because the other thing we've seen is private equity hoovering up newsrooms, wringing them dry, and selling them for parts. There's no way to put a positive spin on any of that. And if you only pay attention to the tragic headlines, a reasonable person might conclude that the only two paths for journalism are get really big or die. Every person on today's panel, though, including myself, works at a newsroom that's cutting a different path. Those paths focus on connecting deeply with the community you serve and growing with them. These paths view other newsrooms as potential collaborators, not competitors. These directions intentionally reframe the question, what is happening in our industry, to focus on answering, what do our communities need from this industry and all of us? Does that seem like an okay topic for a grassroots radio conference? All right, that's beautiful. Let's get to it. Joining me this morning are, in order of smallest community served to largest, Lee Robardes, station manager of KRFP Moscow, Idaho. Little round of applause, please. John Decker, president and general manager of Spokane Public Radio. Wilson Crescioni, investigative editor at Investigate West. And Lisa Loving, the community report news director at Pacifica Radio. Lee, let's start with you. KRFP serves Moscow, Idaho, which is an awesome land-grant university town in the rural panhandle near the border with Washington. You told me you have one and a half staff people, you corrected this morning, yourself and a part-time accountant, and yet you're able to produce daily news coverage for your listeners. How do you do that? How do you manage it?
Well, we started as a low-power FM station in 2004, and in our mission statement, it says KRFP will be defined by volunteerism in all aspects of station operation. And in exchange for that, we're free form, so there's a lot of people who can do what they want on the radio, but then we recruit them for morning mix. We do a lot of aggregating, for sure, on our morning newscasts, but we do have volunteers that go out and record things, like Brenda Cox over there. If you have a panel discussion on campus, if you have a protest, we're going to be there and record it. We record city council meetings and we put them together. This is a formula that may not work for a lot of your stations. You've got to have like a dedicated station manager who's willing to put in 4 hours a day just on news. But we do manage and we do break stories. We're more and more of a news desert now, too, because
absolutely,
the daily news is only 2 days a week.
Wow. So, John, as a public radio guy, I think a lot of people have been asking you about the federal spending cuts in public media, and feel free to weave that in if you want, but I wanted to ask a different question. You came to Spokane Public Radio a little less than a year ago after a couple decades in San Diego, and I think people assume budgets are always bigger, you know, in bigger cities, but are there opportunities you're finding in a mid-sized market like ours that might not have been possible at your last gig?
Yes and no. Being in a community the size of Spokane and the Inland Northwest, keep in mind that we reach Spokane Public Radio with this transmitter. It's a big area. Everybody knows everybody else. I've been here since January. And it's funny because there's this 3 degrees of separation. San Diego is 3.5 million. There's Tijuana, which is another 2 million. We had partnerships all over town. The only real thing about a big city is that you have more kinds of partnerships. But partnerships are personal relationships. It's the kind of stuff that you guys do every single day. And it really doesn't matter how big your market is or how small it is, for that matter, right? It's just a matter of figuring out who's busy, who's doing stuff, who knows people, who's a good journalist, right, in Moscow, who's a good journalist anywhere else, or who has connections with some other organization. So partnering in Spokane in the Inland Northwest is no real different than in San Diego or anywhere else. You make friends, you figure out if you've got something that both of you can do together, and then the ultimate litmus test, right, is whether or not the audience cares, whether if you're actually being smart enough to say, well, it's not just about us. It's about, well, what can we do in service to our audience? And if we can both answer that question, even if we're talking about two audiences on different platforms or different radio stations, whatever it might be, if we can answer that question, that's value. You're providing value to the audience. And it doesn't really matter how big your community is. Meet people, talk to people. And if you have similar goals, you can somehow make 2 + 2 = 5 or 10.
Right. Wilson, Investigate West is a regional investigative reporting nonprofit. You have team members spread across 3 states in the Pacific Northwest. Some of these people have really specific beats. My former colleague, your current colleague, Daniel Walters, focuses on democracy and extremism from Spokane, and he's, I think, expected to cover that entire region. But when I was chatting with you, you said that some of the deepest investigations, regardless of the beat the reporter works on, often come from the specific city or area where the reporter happens to live. Can you talk about that dynamic and what lessons you guys are taking from it as you're building this team in real time?
Sure. Yeah. It's interesting because all of our reporters can the whole region. If they live in Idaho, they can cover stories in Washington. But, you know, I was looking at the stories that they've been producing in the last year, and I would say 90% of them are from the local area that they live or the state that they live in. And I think a few reasons for that are it's easier to find stories when you're just present and able to go to meetings and meet people. It's easier to develop sources. And you might think, oh, well, I have this whole region and there's going to be all these stories for us to go after. But it's pretty difficult in investigative journalism to just find one of those without doing some on the ground reporting. So that's one piece of it. And then the stories that are produced from the state or the city that someone lives, you can just tell that there's more depth of reporting there. They know who to call, what lawmaker to call that can make a difference here or wants to make a difference. They know the characters in the community that would be the right voice to ask a certain question. They're just more connected with what people care about. I think reporters want to write for the people in their community on some instinctive level. So yeah. I think it just results in much deeper stories, and that it's obvious to the audience.
Yeah, each one of you in different ways has said some version of basically have coffee with as many people you can in your community, and it will make your community reporting better, your public media work better, your partnerships better, and even deep investigative work. It's a richer product at the end. Lisa, not everybody on this panel is a Pacifica affiliate, but the work they're doing is indicative of the kind of rich local content that you seem to be trying to build or bring to Pacifica's national audience with Community Report. So can you just give us an idea, what's Community Report trying to do and what sort of results are you seeing?
Community Report is a 30-minute weekly program that is local news from around the nation and expert interviews on national topics of interest to local communities. So really, this whole project started last year when we did a 10-part journalism training for anyone who wanted to come in, any of the affiliates, any sister stations, anything like that, to learn how to cover the elections. It was called Report the Vote. And we actually put those trainings on the Pacifica website. Then those people that participated, we took the reporting they were doing as a result of the training we did, and we started a program that was about the elections and the run-up to the elections. And then we had this community of reporters from all over the country. My job is to build this community of reporters. Some of them are new. Some of them are old hands and extreme professional right. people, but Community Report is how that project has evolved. Now we have reporting from local communities, and I have to brag about some of our people. They're so cool.
Please do.
So I have to start with Linnea Kaler from right here. So proud of you. Linnea came to trainings, and I don't think that she had ever done this before, but she was inspired. And earlier this year, we started doing massive coverage of a couple of these No Kings Day protests, and Linnea went out there. She did multiple stories and incredible work, and thank you again. There's other people too. I'm thinking of Davine Dial, who's a station manager of a low power FM in, what is it, North Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina. She went through these trainings for the reporting, but then she ended up helping us cover Hurricane Helene. So really the point of this project is to help evolve a growing community of reporters who are, as you were talking about, from their local community to cover their local community. And by the way, I am looking for people who will want to contribute to our October 18th No Kings coverage. So let me know. Sorry. Thank you.
Thanks. You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Luke Baumgarten of Range Media and KYRS, continuing this conversation about the future of local news at the Grassroots Radio Conference in Spokane, Washington. Let's do one more round of applause to prove we're doing this live. All right. So I'm sure there are exceptions, but I feel confident saying that basically, every community in America is served by fewer journalists today than 30 years ago. In the last decade, we've seen more outlets fighting those coverage and expertise gaps by collaborating, which we've already started talking about, not just among fellow Sinclair-owned radio stations or McClatchy-owned newspapers, but across disciplines and even across companies or nonprofits that might have thought of each other as competitors in the past. So Lisa, I'll start with you again. Not every Pacifica affiliate has its own news team. So as Community Report grows, are you and Pacifica thinking about how you might sort of become the support organization to help other community radio stations develop this news product?
Luke, we have big ideas and they're already in place, okay?
Okay, tell me about it.
So I do this 30-minute weekly show, which is a public affairs show that anybody can carry, no matter where you're located in your local community. But we also have been meeting to do just a more robust news platform in general. So we're working with KPFA in Berkeley. They are starting to put their nightly news broadcast on AudioPort, on a content hub. Any local community can use that. It's a national and international. It's a one-hour broadcast. I mean, you could replace Democracy Now! With that. I don't know if I just said something wrong, but it's incredible
wow.
coverage.
Wow, shots fired.
Right? We also have, we're working with WBAI in New York, which has this growing, emerging expertise in live streaming protests, which is crucial right now, and other breaking news as well. We also had a wonderful meeting of a couple of weeks ago with a coalition of media outlets, radio outlets, in the Rocky Mountain West. It's like 24 stations, and they're sharing their content with us as well. It's wow. incredible. And what we really want is to look at the news desert issue. Local news is crucial in people understanding their role in the nation. So that's our goal, to make it so that even stations that don't have a news department, let alone a news director, can have access to our national content, and it's good quality content. It's actually a really exciting time to be with Pacifica. I think that this is our moment.
It's so fascinating you say that. I talk to a lot of people who are very politically engaged in Spokane, and even know like how many races are being run in the county, from, you know, the big stuff like city council member in Spokane to the cemetery district in Elk, Washington, where I grew up. But when they're talking, they're always talking about national stuff. And it's really fascinating and indicative of the news desert stuff we're experiencing, that even the most politically active people in my county, for example, are spending the majority of their time when they're convening talking about national news. And that's obviously a symptom of social media, a symptom of consolidation and stuff, but it's also tells me that we're not plugged in as well as we could be into our communities.
I just have to jump in here and follow up really quick. What's really important about training local people in covering your own community is that you know the context. You know the real stories of your community. You're not a helicopter reporter. And when we weave together our local stories, that's who we are as a country. It's even bigger than the news. I have to say that.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for letting
me, buddy.
That's
totally fair. Wilson, you told me there are 9 reporters on staff at Investigate West. And that's a little bit of a misnomer, because you're an editor and you still write really amazing investigations. So I won't check your math exactly, but there's 9 reporters with that title. And 2 of them are explicitly collaborative investigative reporters. You've always offered your stories to outlets to republish for free, and you've worked with other newsrooms before. We've actually worked together before. But now you're putting collaboration into people's job titles. So why was that important to y'all, and what have the results been so far?
I think it was important to us because we were getting all these tips from reporters in small towns or a small newspaper or something like that, who said, hey, there's this big scandal in my city and I don't have the time to investigate it, but someone should. It's important enough that someone should be looking into this. And we just got enough of those that we thought it's really important for us to cover these stories in these local communities, even if we don't live there. But we also know that the reporters that live there have all that context. Like, we might not be local there. And as I was talking about earlier, that is important for a deep investigation. So the idea was that the collaborative reporter could work with local news outlets to provide the investigative reporting that is crucial for that community. And really, it's mutually beneficial because it sometimes provides guidance. So that's how it started. We hired our first collaborative investigative reporter in November of last year, Mo Clark. She's a Washington State University Murrow News Fellow. And it was a little bit of an experiment what a collaborative reporter would look like. But already we've seen exactly what we were hoping for. There was a recent story that she and the Mercer Island reporter collaborated on. That was exactly what the scenario I was describing earlier, where they had this teacher that was accused of sexual abuse, and they wanted to break this story, but they didn't feel like they had the tools to do so. And so Mo stepped in and helped, and I think that turned out, I mean, it's a huge story now. I think there's still follow-ups that are being written. Mercer Island reporter, I think it was one of the top stories on their website all year, maybe the top all year. And it's just an important story to cover. So that was kind of the idea, and we have seen the benefits of that so far.
Awesome. So John, historically, one of the barriers to cooperation was standards radio is partially governed by the FCC, which is not a constraint we at Range have for sure, although most radio affiliates will. There's also a question, though, of like how style and tone and reporting practices. You and I have talked about this in the past, that at San Diego, and it sounds like you're trying to do a similar thing in Spokane, you were able to build a pretty powerful collaboration with Voice of San Diego, which is a digital news outlet down there. How did you navigate building that partnership between the two newsrooms? And was it an obvious fit for both teams? What issues did you guys have to work through, if any?
Right. Well, whenever you're going into a partnership, you have to deal with the egos of the people who are involved, right? I mean, it's like any other relationship that you have, whether in your personal or your professional world, right? And I was thinking about, Wilson, what you're talking about as far as the collaboration is concerned, and my answer is twofold. Number one, when you work together and you collaborate, you hope to utilize the skills and abilities that each person has that you don't have, right? And you mentioned the reporter who didn't feel like they had the skills or the abilities to break this story. And you gave them that chance, and there you have it. There's a tremendous amount of public service there. So you sort of look for partnerships that help complete you, right? So with Voice of San Diego, you know, in the early days, working with Scott and the team, they had a terrific, terrific idea, and they moved into a void that was being left not just by the local newspapers, but also by public media. I mean, we were not digitally savvy.
Right.
So at Voice of San Diego, and for those of you that don't know, they're probably one of the vanguards of online nonprofit journalism, and they do a terrific job. And they had a skill that we didn't, which is to tell a story on a digital platform.
Right.
We had what they didn't. We had this thing called a transmitter, right? And so just from a technological perspective, there was a great collaboration that provided public service across multiple platforms. Also, they had this, they have an edge. I don't want to say it's an edge. It's not, it's just different, right?
Right.
You know, our public radio newsroom back when we were working with them was, yeah, had a bit of a different tone to it. So the answer to the question is this: it's okay if the way you tell the story to your audience works for you. The journalism has to be the journalism first, right? And this is the key, is that if you're working on a story, that you get to what the story is, whatever the who, what, where, when, why, and how, and who's responsible, and what happened, and all that sort of stuff. How you tell it to your audience is up to you, and the editorial process has to be okay with that. You have to be okay with Range or Voice of San Diego or anybody else. You have to be okay with them telling the story in their way, as long as that journalism that you work so hard to uncover or to develop is consistent across those platforms.
Right.
It's just a matter of, you're telling the same story, you're just using, you know, different verbs or different words and different ways to approach it. And as long as you can get to that point and say, look, editorially speaking, that's how you want to talk, or that's how you want to present it to your audience online or otherwise, then we're going to be doing it our way. And as long as we all agree that we're telling the same story, it really sort of it connects into the diversity of information that we can provide, right? So I think that, you know, again, 2 + 2 = 5 or 10 even.
Yeah. We're going to have a Q&A session after this. I hope everybody has a lot of questions. I feel like we're barely scratching the surface here. But Lee, I wanted to conclude with you, and I wanted to start by painting at least my understanding of the picture of the town you live in, Moscow, Idaho, which is one of my favorite towns anywhere and has been in a really dubious national spotlight between the media frenzy over the quadruple homicide at the University of Idaho and because Doug Wilson, who Tucker Carlson called, quote, the man most closely identified with Christian nationalism, has spent almost 45 years building a national empire of far-right churches, homeschooling associations, a publishing house, a school, and even a college from his Christ Church headquarters in Moscow. National listeners may have seen Wilson on CNN last month. Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, who I will not be referring to as the Secretary of War, attends a church rooted in Wilson's theology. So now Wilson's reach extends to the upper echelons of power in America, and he lives in your town. You told me you've been reporting on Wilson since basically the founding of KRFP 20 years ago. And then we just heard everybody on this panel in different ways talk about the problems of helicopter journalism. So this would be a great opportunity for somebody like you, Lee, to go, you know, become a talking head on CNN or something to tell the real story of Moscow, Idaho, the real story of Doug Wilson. What you've done instead, and I think this is really beautiful, to be honest. You told me you guys have been focused on bringing new insights on Wilson to the Moscow community itself. And one of the ways you've been doing that is by collaborating with the makers of a podcast that I've listened to and I really, really love called Sons of Patriarchy, which emerged from and is independently produced by the Christchurch Survivor community. And so the question there is simple, like, why is that your focus now? And why was it so important to sort of bring the voices of this sort of sub-community of Moscovites to just surface those for the town?
Well, we don't really collaborate with Sons of Patriarchy. We broadcast it. We have interviewed the people that produce it, and their team is Christians who feel that what Doug Wilson is doing is very unchristian-like, and atheists. They started in October of last year, and they have produced at least 85 episodes. A lot of them are on mic interviews with survivors, survivors of abuse, and you get to hear their stories. This is something in the last 20 years we haven't had really the capability. It's almost like you have to have a degree in psychology to do these sorts of interviews. And we didn't necessarily have access to too many survivors. We did break stories or put stories on the radio that were only really covered in social media about pedophile scandals there, where Doug Wilson will not tell the community about an accused pedophile, let alone his own congregation, until it's too late. And then he makes an arranged marriage for the pedophile, which was a student at his college, and they don't have dormitories. And so what we've done over the years is we've done a lot of candidate interviews, and they do, you know, Doug Wilson has said, oh, I'm going to make Moscow a Christian town. Moscow is a progressive town. It's been progressive, leaning progressive at least for, you know, the nearly 40 years I've been there. And whenever there is an election for local school board or library district, they always have their candidates, and for city council. And we have a three-pronged process. We interview the candidates first. We record all the public candidate forums that we can, like League of Women Voters. And we also invite them to call-in candidate forums as well. And that way, they're pretty much outed as to what their perspective is as far as, you know, patriarchy and Christian nationalism. And if you don't know what Christian nationalism is, it's the idea that only Christian, generally Christian men, can have authority in politics.
So I think it's about time to take some questions. Ursula's going to come up here and grab a microphone, and we'll just run around, and as we've been demonstrating up here for the last 30 minutes, really, really dig into that mic there.
Hi, Emma Lugo with KBOO Community Radio. I just wanted to ask about information silos and the death of journalism. First of all, I just want to say that I love all of you, and I think that what you all do is great. You know, and we think we're doing news, and so does Axios, and so does News Nation. But there's a reason Congress killed public broadcasting. They killed funding for it because they think that it has a liberal bias, just like we have a progressive bias. I mean, we do. We're serving these niche communities. In the meantime, the country as a whole has just completely lost faith in journalism, and it's become highly, highly polarized in terms of ideology. And I don't really see us overcoming that. I used to be an editor for indie media. That whole way of producing news died because everybody became their own journalist. And we haven't moved with how society has shifted. So I don't know, could you comment on anything generally in that field? Thank you.
Absolutely. I want to say my opinion about this is I think local is part of how we save ourselves and save our communities. I have so many people tell me, and these are often conservative folks, I hate the media, but I love Range, which is my publication. And I think what that means is people have gotten very sick of the national 24-hour news cycle. And in some cases, they've gotten sick of their local media too. Like, I don't want to in any way say that that's not the case. You're right that so many people have become journalists. My outlet started 5 years ago, and I would not have been able to start it 10 years ago. But people have the places they love. And one of the reasons I'm so passionate about collaboration is, like, I want some of the love that Lee gets from his listeners to splash back on Range, and ditto for John and Wilson and Lisa. I think we're at a point where local is going to save us if there's anything to be saved. And that's why I'm so passionate about collaboration.
Emma, I love that question, and there's no great answer to it. There's some people who might say, this is who we are as a nation, and this is where we were always heading. But I think that for Pacifica Foundation, and also for people who love grassroots media, part of what we're doing is taking the microphone and putting it on the table in the rural areas and stepping back and letting people pick it up. And I think that's important. My friend Jamila of the All African People's Revolutionary Party would say, if you're not organizing with others, you're not organizing. But I just want you to have faith. I want you to have faith that there's going to be people in their local communities who can learn these skills and do what they know their community needs.
Can I follow up real quick on a couple of things? The thing to keep in mind is 92% of Americans consume radio on a weekly basis. So radio is not dead. Radio is out there, and people still use it. It's up to us to figure out how we evolve. Luke and I were on the phone the other day, and I went off on a tangent about this book that I recommend all of you read. It's called The Gutenberg Parenthesis, and it's about control of media, essentially. It's a control of information. We have to let go of this idea that somehow we hold the truth, right? That any one reporter, any one newsroom, any one network holds the truth about a story. We do not own that truth. The truth has many, 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 many different iterations. And we need to be okay with that. Just because we report a story one way is not the only way to see that story. We have to evolve our thinking about how we play our roles in this very, 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 very bifurcated society. So that was my soapbox, and thank you for letting me stand on it.
Thanks, John.
Well, I want to really thank Luke for bringing this together and all of you panelists for participating. Luke, I'll let you end the show.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to a special edition of Free Range, a co-production of KYRS, Thin Air, Community Radio, and Range Media, a worker-owned newsroom serving the Inland Northwest, recorded in front of a live audience at the 2025 Grassroots Radio Conference. One more thank you to all of our guests, Lee Robartis of KRFP Moscow, John Decker of Spokane Public Radio, Wilson Crescioni of Investigate West, and Lisa Loving of Pacifica Radio. Thank you so much, everyone.
Hey, everybody. It's Greg McVicker, creator of Undercurrents. Glad you're listening. This is KBOO 90.7 Portland.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby